www.ecofoundation.org.
From the studios of WRPI in Troy, New York, this is Little Brother, the show where we talk about high technology, low intelligence, and where we play the music too loud to hear me. And we're like any responsible little brother, we tell on Big Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter. I'll be your host for the next hour, along with my co-host, Lil. Say hi.
Hey there.
Hey.
Wow.
And Phil's... Phil's around tonight, but this afternoon, but is feeling a little bit down. So if any of you want to send your well wishes along, that'd be great. If not, well, we understand. Stay tuned. Little Brother is right around the corner. Okay, and we are back. Before we get started, I need to let you know that the opinions and views expressed in this program are strictly those of the participants, not necessarily those of WRPI staff or management, the Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, or the Rensselaer Student Union. Responsible parties with an opposing viewpoint may request airtime for a rebuttal. So what we're going to talk about is technology, as usual, and we've been off the air for about a month, so please forgive the slightly rusty edge here, and we'll try to get everything honed back up and running smoothly again. If you want to throw in your 2 cents worth, it's greatly appreciated. The phone number here at WRPI is area code 518-276-6248. That number again, 518-276-6248. I suppose that probably a good opening question, based on recent events, would you fly? Well, would you
me fly? In particular?
Well, I suppose that's the question that we're one of the questions we're probably going to visit.
I was always a little shaky about flying anyway.
Yeah,
it's kind of hard to say.
So
I'm just. I mean, we're supposed to go on vacation to Ireland in 2003, but if it was this spring, I really don't know if I would.
Hmm. I've given it a little bit of thought myself. I've kind of come to the conclusion that I might be willing to fly in a smaller craft, but if you're going on vacation to Ireland, the smaller craft just isn't going to make it. No.
But you know, I'll tell you, those little puddle jumpers are the greatest. You hit the turbulence. So great. You hit a little bit of turbulence and the entire plane turns and it shakes and rattles like Godzilla's got it by the tail. It's great. It's better than a roller coaster. I don't know. Consider, you know, going to Ireland was like a life ambition for me. So the fact that I would consider delaying it is pretty serious. But I don't know. I guess maybe I'm too scaredy.
Well, hey, guess what? We do have a caller on the line.
Dear God.
Let's see what we've got.
Oh, no. I guess maybe I'm too scaredy.
Well, hey, guess what? We do have a caller on the line.
Dear God.
Let's see what we've got.
Who we've got.
Hello, caller. Are you there?
Yes, hello.
Hello.
Hey, I love the music you were just playing a few minutes ago.
Hey, thanks.
Oh, thanks.
Can you tell me who that was?
Which bit?
The second song to the last.
Second song to the last. Let me ask here. Lolly is still here. Let me ask her. What was that second to last song you were playing? The last song you were playing? Here, come on over here.
A drumming group?
Mm-hmm. That was so good.
It was great.
No, it was a group. The name of the group was Haran.
Hayan? How do you spell that?
H-A-R-E-M. This was the latest song.
What?
The previous song?
Yes.
Before latest?
Okay.
You
your
Hello?
Yes, I'm here. My name is Michael.
Hi.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You want to learn the latest one or the previous one?
The one before the last one.
Okay, it was Tarkan.
What?
Tarkan.
Tarkan?
Yes, Tarkan. T-A-R-K-A-R-N-N. I'm sorry. T-A-R-K-A-N. And the name of the album is Karma.
Karma?
Yes, Karma.
Uh-huh.
K-A-R-M-A. You can find out through net. Actually, he's very popular singer in Europe. Yeah, in Europe, in Latin America. He's trying to merge America also.
Was that Latin music?
No, it's not. It's Turkish.
What?
And the name of the song was Kuzu Kuzu.
Oh my goodness.
K-U-Z-U.
K-U-Z-U.
And again, K-U-Z-U.
K-U.
Z-U.
Z-U.
B-U.
Z-U.
K-U-Z-U.
K-U-Z-U. K-U-Z-U.
As in zebra?
Like,
K-U, zebra, U.
Exactly.
Kuzu. That was the name of the other band?
No, this was the song.
The song, Kuzu.
Yes.
So let's see, the group's name is called Tarkan.
Tarkan, T.
Tarkan. They played Karma and they played Kuzu.
Yes.
Both of those songs were from them?
No, Karma
is the name of the album.
Yeah, the name of the album.
Oh, album.
Yes. If you want to search it, you can just write Tarkan and Karma. It will come up, I'm sure.
Oh. Okay. You play any more of that? Or do you play it again tomorrow?
Next week.
Next
Saturday
week,
at noon, yeah.
Oh, good. I'm looking forward to that.
Okay, nice to hear that.
What's your name, by the way?
My name is Lale.
Madeline?
And this is Lale. L-A-L-E.
M-A-L-E?
L.
L-L?
Yes, L-A-L-E. And the name of the show was The Turkish Rainbow.
The Turkish?
Rainbow.
Rainbow?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, so this is the hour for Turkish music.
Yes, that's right.
Oh, I didn't know I liked Turkish music.
You should listen then.
Neither did I. I was surprised.
That made me feel like dancing.
Yeah, I'm
I
sure.
I actually got busy working. I got up on my feet and I was just nonstop.
I actually was dancing here in the station.
Yeah, actually, I saw you. Yeah, you were dancing. Yeah.
It's very infectious music. It's very difficult not to dance to.
Yeah, actually, yeah, that's right. Okay, I'm giving back microphone to Chuck, okay? Have a nice day.
Thank you, you too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
One of the many public services we provide here at WRPI is to provide you with music that you won't hear anyplace else.
And some good old-fashioned cultural edumacation.
Nothing wrong with that.
No.
Nothing wrong with that. Well, we could go on next with a few items from the Risks Digest, like we frequently do. This one came from Herbert Kanner. He says that as a patient being irradiated by a Varian linear accelerator, it's interested to be told by a technician that when they're behind schedule, it's usually because of a computer crash. He said the accelerator is controlled by three computers that talk to each other. I inquired further and found out that the RPC is running Windows 2000. Not exactly confidence-inspiring. For those of you who might believe in the that national ID cards might be a good idea, check out the December 2000 commune.acm Inside Risks column by Peter G. Newman, found at www.csl.sri.com. In anticipation of a U.S. House hearing next Friday on the subject. Actually, that would have been yesterday, I believe. It's not just the cards themselves that would entail risks, but even more so, all of the supporting infrastructure, widespread accessibility to networking, monitoring, cross-linked databases, data mining, etc., and particularly the risks of untrustworthy insiders issuing bogus identification cards, as happened a few years back on a large scale in the Virginia State Motor Vehicle Agency. The latest item on the ease of getting phony or illegal or unchecked identification papers is found in an article by Michelle Macklin, or Malkin, rather, of Creator Syndicate, which was seen in the I gotta get my tongue untangled. I just can't talk tonight, this afternoon. I'm also keep saying tonight because I'm used to doing the show in the evening.
Did you know that Phil recently got the software Acid, you know, where you can make your own kind of techno-y music?
And we're actually something about that.
Yes, we are actually, I shouldn't be telling you this, but I will for the humor value. We are actually going to take a whole bunch of clips of you and make a little brother mix of you trying to say Sklerov over and over and over again. Sklerov, 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 Sklerov,
Sklerov. Oh, bring it on. Sklerov. Bring it on. I will welcome it, and I will even play
Let me get my tang untangled. Let me start that sentence again. We're going to have that all through there with a lot of sampling. It'll be very amusing.
Bring it on. Like I said, yeah. I welcome it, and I'll even play it.
And Phil said, do you think he'll play it on the station? And I said, oh,
damn
try
right.
and stop him. Try and stop him.
Anyway, as I was saying here, on November 10th, 2001, this was when the article appeared in the San Francisco Chronicle, Abdullah Noman, employed by the U.S. Department of Commerce, issued a bogus visas in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, in one case in 1998, charging approximately $3,178. The article also notes a variety of sleazy schemes for obtaining visas, in some cases without ever appearing in person and without any background checks, and in other cases for investments of $150,000. The article concludes with this sentence, quote, until our embassy officials stop selling American visas blindly to every foreign investor waving cash, Homeland Security is a pipe dream, end quote. I'm not sure that conclusion is representative of the full nature of the problem of bogus ID, but the problem is clearly significant. A driver's license or passport or a visa or a national ID card is not really proof of identity or genuineness or anything else.
Now, how close are we to actually being a go on these national identity cards?
One would hope we are an extremely far way off.
Yeah, but I don't know. I haven't been following the story. To tell you the truth, I've been kind of bad. I haven't been following the news since I got on here because it's just, some of it is just too alarming. you don't want to sit down for a relaxing evening at home and start it with a big panic attack because you watch the news. So, you know.
Yeah, I can understand that.
I stayed away from it.
Well, besides which, I think that for a large part that the mainstream media designs the news for Two things. One, it's got to have shock value because mm-hmm. they want to rope you in and keep your attention. And two, it's got to be something that isn't of any real significance.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, why do you think we all know so much about John Bobbitt? Because people got to say penis on the air so many times. Penis, 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 penis.
Yeah.
If they could, they'd just sit there at their little news desks and go penis, penis.
Hey, why not? I mean, Howard Stern does exactly that, and he's making
a
killing doing it.
Well, actually, he'll say, like, clitoris, 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 boobs. That's what he'll say.
Right.
He won't say penis. I don't care about penis.
But you get the point.
Yes,
you
know? Get the point.
The point of it is that you can, and there are people who are making a killing doing exactly that.
Yeah.
And all I can say is I'm glad to be here providing some sort of an alternative to that. To a certain extent.
Sclerob. Let me get my tang untangled.
Yeah, that's the one. let's see. Andrew Bryden writes that serious weakness had been discovered in the methods used by banks to protect the number that lets you get money from a cash machine, your PIN number. I shouldn't say PIN number. Your PIN. We'll leave it at that. Researchers from the University of Cambridge have found that computer systems which check these numbers are valid... these numbers are valid or easy to defeat. They warn that unscrupulous insiders could exploit these weaknesses to raid customer accounts. The researchers have called on banks to revise their security arrangements and use more open procedures to protect customers' cash. The physical construction of the crypto processors is certified to a high standard to ensure that the boxes cannot be forced to give up the keys that they use to scramble data. Any physical tampering with the box makes them destroy the keys that they use. However, security researchers Michael Bond and Richard Clayton have found serious weaknesses in the software cryptoprocessors use to handle the encryption keys as they talk to different programs. Using the clues provided by the leaky software, the cracking time can be reduced to just 24 hours.
Hmm.
Yeah, actually, that's something I find amazing. I used to work for a company that dealt with those boxes, and due to our wonderful crypto export rules in this nation, we had to actually get the... We couldn't use American-made processors because most of our customers were overseas. So we had to. We usually bought the crypto processors from a company in England, and these machines are tough.
The English ones?
Well, any of them really. I'm assuming that any other brand was built more or less the same way. They had two high security locks on the front, one on the back. Just your regular key type cam lock, and you had to Gesundheit.
Excuse me.
You had to, in order to get the front panel open, you had to have both of the keys. Theoretically, what you would do is one bank officer would hold one key, and another bank officer would hold another key, and somebody else entirely would hold the key that would open the top of the machine. But before you could open the top of the machine, you had to open the front of the machine. And, you know, it's really weird things like that. And to hear that somebody found a weakness as simple after they went to all this trouble, and I'm sure that they're spending thousands of dollars a piece on these boxes to make them this physically secure.
Besides which, they never give keys to anyone that's lower than a manager, right? When was the last time you were able to get three managers together in the same place in any business? Not just the bank business, any business whatsoever. It never happens at my office. Never. Theoretically, we're all there 9 to 5 every day, 5 days a week. But in practice, you'll never see all three of them in the same place.
Actually, I'm going to tell you something.
They're like Superman and Clark Kent.
Company I work for now, you can get managers in one place at one time. You just can't get them apart because they're always in meetings. Anyway, if you have an opinion about that, or about flying, or about anything else technological, or about anything that you may want to discuss, you can always give us a call at area code 518-276-6248 and speak your piece. Let's see here. One of the, this one comes from Monty Solomon. He says, one of the fastest growing mobile phone users or phone providers is indefinitely storing information that allows its customers' movements over the last 2 years to be mapped to within a few hundred meters. As the government rushes through emergency anti-terror legislation that would require vast amounts of electronic communication data be retained in the name of national security, The Guardian has established that Virgin Mobile has been storing the location records of its last 1 million, or I'm sorry, of its 1 million customers since the network launched in November 1999. The privacy watchdog information commissioner told The Guardian that it would be investigating the practice to establish whether it contravenes regulations governing retention of communications data.
I'm telling you, low-tech solutions, right? We just have everybody electronically tagged like bears. So much easier, so much less expensive, so much less wasted time and money and effort. Just have somebody, you know, monitor where all the tags are.
I don't know if that's necessarily
national security.
I don't know if that's necessarily a low-tech solution, but
well, it's lower tech than what they're doing. You know, they're like reinventing the wheel here.
You got a point.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, the thing of it is, those electronic tags have got a limited lifespan to them and a very limited range to them.
Hmm.
And you got your choice: range or lifespan. You know, pick one.
Hmm.
But the cell phone, you know, everybody carries a cell phone with them. They plug it in to recharge it at night. Well, not everybody does, but a lot of people do. Enough people do to make it. I can kind of see why they would have gone this particular route. Anyway, another one from Monty Solomon. He says Dutch police are bombarding stolen cell phones with short message service. The Amsterdam police have been using short messaging system missives to block the use of stolen cell phones, and while the campaign has been successful, the mobile cellular providers are concerned about the cost and bandwidth strain of the campaign. About 4 months ago, the Amsterdam police began cooperating with the national telecommunications provider KPN Telecom. When stolen phones are reported, the police asked KPN to use the phone to locate the telephone number. Then, every 3 to 5 minutes, the police sent SMS messages to the telephone saying, "Warning, this is a stolen telephone. Using it is against the law. Stealing it is a felony." Kind of an interesting idea in principle, but I guess they must have a lot of stolen cell phones in Holland. I mean, if they're worried about the bandwidth strain of it.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Let's see. Well, we can move off of the Risks Digest for a minute here. Hey, we have a call.
All right.
Hello,
hi.
Caller. You're on the air.
Oh, okay. I wanted to talk about flying in planes.
Mm-hmm. Go right ahead.
Okay. Basically, up until September 11th, I had plans to visit my daughter, my husband and I, in Arizona, mm-hmm. and we were going to fly. And so I was really squeamish. And then what happened November 12th is like, I'm not flying. I'll take a train. It'll take days. I don't care. I'm not getting up in the air. And the other thing was, I thought, okay, maybe a smaller plane, right? You know, something that, you know, I know the pilot kind of thing.
Yeah, just kind of like hop your way over there.
Sort of. From airport
to airport.
Yeah. But one of the things, today we read in the newspaper, it wasn't the Times Union, and it was during, you know, probably it came out on Wednesday. Don King, the fight promoter, he was flying back Monday from Los Angeles, and King was, here's a little paragraph from the article.
Go ahead.
King was flying to Las Vegas in his Gulfstream 2 when the flight hit unexpected turbulence. He was shot out of his seat and hit his head on the ceiling in the aircraft. The Las Vegas Review-Journal reported Thursday, the force tore the arm off his chair.
Ouch.
Being in that plane is like in my living room. I was so relaxed. I was relaxing. I didn't have my seatbelt on. King told the newspaper, never again. I learned my lesson. This will never happen again. And Tuesday night, he went to a hospital in Las Vegas. That's where he lives. And they did a CT scan and a thorough examination. The scan revealed 5 shotgun pellets in the back of his head from a 1959 shooting.
Oh, jeepers.
Wow.
My comment is, it's a good thing it wasn't an MRI.
You've been thrown around.
I can tell you've been listening to this show for a bit.
It seems to be.
But, wow. You know, I'm certainly glad it
wasn't
an MRI.
When you have metal in your body, you don't want an MRI.
This isn't Defarge, is it? Is this Defarge I'm talking to?
No, my name's Mary.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but okay. I just thought it was funny.
Yeah.
You know, the whole thing about the CT scan and the five pellets in his head. But I'm not too sure about puddle jumpers either.
No, no, not at all. Because, of course, originally the fear was, terrorism, but now we've got a fear the plane's just plain old falling apart from turbulence.
That's it.
That's truly alarming.
He lost the arm on his chair.
Yeah, well, he's lucky he only lost the arm on his chair instead of just his arm.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, I think it would take a lot less effort for a person to lose their arm than a chair.
Yeah.
The article was in the Times Union Friday, November 16th.
Well, this goes against my better judgment, but I'm going to say it anyway. I'm surprised all the padding he has on top of his head didn't...
I know.
didn't do something for
too.
Him.
Well, you know, he didn't have a... It didn't say he had a concussion or anything, just the bullets. You know, that's from ages ago.
True.
I mean, it's tough to think that bullets could penetrate that hair, but apparently they can.
Apparently they
well,
did.
Maybe he
had it in a more reasonable style at the
maybe
time.
Maybe that's the
in
reason why he grew the hair that way.
Slightly possible, you know, but I thought it was funny.
Wow.
I'm sorry, I couldn't resist making
I know,
crack.
Neither could I. I had to call you up. You know, you said about flying and you said about, you know, medical technology. And it's like, this is a good one. This is a
that
good
is
one
very
on
good
both
one.
Categories.
Yeah. Because and for the benefit of listeners who may not have tuned into earlier programs, I'll just sum up really quickly. One of the things that I've discussed a couple of times on this show has been metal objects in the presence of MRIs, and there was an instance. It was somewhere in New York. I forget exactly which hospital it was, but it was one that had been cited for safety violations in the past. Where they fired up an MRI and an oxygen tank went flying across the room and crushed the skull of some poor 6-year-old boy.
Yep.
And I wish I had the details in front of me now.
Their comment was, it was a good thing he was asleep. You know?
That's nicely sensitive.
Yeah,
that's
wasn't
good.
It? Wasn't it?
Oh,
yeah.
Boy.
What was it doing there? You know?
Flying across the room, I believe.
They accidentally stored it there. Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Metal in that room? No.
No.
Well, you know, the thing of it is, I think human beings as a whole have this this one particular weakness, and that is that when we want to put something down, we do that.
Yeah.
You know, and this is how clutter grows.
Yeah, well, we have another weakness in that. As long as we can get away with the least effort possible, we will.
That's it.
We'll use that to our advantage, and clearly that's what happened here. Someone put it down, wasn't thinking, wasn't paying attention, and it just stayed there.
And he's gone.
Yeah.
That's right.
I read that one, too. Part of the thing is, I'm a little bit focused on MRIs because I have a piece of metal in my neck. So it's like...
So you know these things.
So I know, I've told everybody I know, do not get me in an MRI. If I'm unconscious, don't care. Just scream and holler. The answer is no.
You must have a delight going through the security checkpoint at an airport.
Yeah, pretty much. They sort of whisk my neck, and all of a sudden they see this beep, beep, beep. It's like, yes, that's it. It's a clamp around one of my arteries.
Oh.
And it's like, you don't want that clamp to move anywhere from where it is.
No, absolutely not.
That's it. I'm gone.
Do they? How quickly do they whisk you through after they've found that your neck makes the thing beep?
Fairly quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the good news is I'm not flying again, so I probably won't see one of those for a while.
Yeah. Not until they sort out this whole wake turbulence thing.
If you got to go into a, if you've got to go into a courthouse
or a state office or something like that.
Yeah.
I know.
You still run into
I'll
that
let them know. They
or
see
even
the scar.
Even a stadium at times, you know.
Oh, especially now.
Who is it? The Nick Arena or the Pepsi Arena?
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I still call it the Nick, too.
They do that. You know, they have...
Yes, they do.
They want ID. They probably have scanners by now.
Well, I did not know that. The last time I went, the last time I went there, it was about a decade ago.
Interesting, because last time I went there, they did not. They didn't check for ID. They just did a pat down. But I guess they weren't expecting a particularly violent crowd.
I guess not.
I think it depends on the show.
I had friends last Sunday go to the Chinese acrobats, and they wanted ID and that kind of stuff if you were parking.
Hmm.
Ouch. You know, so it's like...
Well, okay. They have so many objects flying around.
Oh, like sure.
people, objects, trapezes,
There's a point, if somebody was to throw something, it would probably go largely unnoticed until it hit its intended target.
That's it.
With all the other things
flying around. Who is it? Where? Hoyt Cinema doesn't even want...
no bags, yeah.
Bags. Purses, diaper bags, anything.
Nothing. Now, what a person like myself who tends to take the bus, go shopping, and then whimsically decide to go to a movie. Mm-hmm. Now, what I'm supposed to do, I don't know.
Is go to the movie first.
I guess.
And then go shopping.
No whimsicalness.
No
whimsical movie going for me anymore.
Well, I'm sure there's more than just toys.
That's a small sacrifice to make.
But
it also means I can't sneak in candy anymore, and that is a big sacrifice.
They let
my mother-in-law through with candy, though. They took her purse away, but they let her take the she had these little gummy mint leaves, and they let her bring those in. So I think next time I'll just go with her, and she can give them the sweet and innocent face, and they'll let me bring in my candy.
I suppose the question then would be, what about the other? I mean, Hoyt's has got the market cornered in the area, but not entirely.
No, not entirely.
They do have at least three competitors I can think of right off the top of my head. What
yes,
are their
and
competitors
the,
doing?
The well, you know, I don't know. We should ask.
Madison, Spectrum.
Yep.
Yeah.
And who else?
Lowe's.
That's right.
Lowe's wasn't doing anything when I was there last week.
No, they weren't doing anything different.
Yeah. I don't know about the Norma Jean and the Spectrum now that I don't live in Albany. I used to live around the corner from the Norma Jean,
They would have advertised it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, you never know. You don't.
Yeah.
He could have just sort of quietly changed it.
Sure.
But, I mean, I used to know the manager.
My husband had a suggestion. Bring the baby and just use the napkins if he makes a mess.
That's right.
If you can't bring in diaper bags, use their napkins.
Mm. I think they have you leave your stuff behind the counter. That's what they did to my mother-in-law. They had her leave the purse there, and she could get it on the way out. But she just couldn't bring it in the theater.
So they're concerned about me bringing it in, but they leave it behind the counter.
Yeah, I don't know. I think they went through it. They did. They made her empty everything, like, piece by piece, and they let her take the candy in, but they made her leave everything else behind.
Huh.
I don't know. I suppose then if you really need to change a diaper, you can just go behind the counter.
I guess. Oh, boy.
I don't know.
Nice sanitary place to do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, like a mall bathroom is really a nice sanitary place to do it, too. It's probably cleaner than that room.
Probably. Well, thank you.
Oh,
not
you're welcome.
Problem.
Thank you very much for calling.
Thanks. And thank you very, very much for listening. And tell a friend.
I will.
All right.
I will. All right. You have a nice day.
You too.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Well, that was a pleasant call. If anybody else wants to call in, the number here is area code 518-276-6248. And if you don't, then the number is still 518-276-6248. We need to take a quick moment for station ID. You're listening to 91.5 FM WRPI Troy.
WRPI, Troy, New York, 91.5 FM, the Capital District's alternative voice.
Show is Little Brother. Topic is technology. And can you hear that now? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Little technical difficulty in the station. We have another caller on the line, so let me bring her on. Hello, caller. Are you there?
Hi. Yes, I am.
All right.
I will say for the people listening, too, how glad I am to have you back.
Oh, thank you. We've missed you.
And I made sure I marked my calendar for today and this time so we could get you again.
Hey, thank you very much.
And
also, I might make a quick mention that if somebody misses the show for some reason, you know, and I understand that people live busy lives, they have other things to do. If this show gets missed for whatever reason, all of the shows will show up on my website usually about a couple, 3 days later. And the website is www.radiocritter.com.
Did you change the name?
Actually, yes.
It used to be Tri-City Ads, right?
That's right, yes. But Phil went and purchased Radio Critter because he thought it would be better.
Oh, cool. Cool. Well, Tri-City Ads probably scared the daylights out of too many people.
Yeah, well, it may have. But basically what it was is it was a... What it was is that we had this domain name just laying around and available. So,
uh-huh.
And actually Phil was the one that owned it and still owns it. As far as I know, it still works. But the Critter Radio, or RadioCritter.com, not only goes into the same server, but it actually points you straight to the page that's about this show. If you go in through Tri-City Ads, you go through 15 gajillion other things to get there.
Uh-huh.
So it's a more direct route as well.
Okay.
So, I'm sorry, I misdirected from what you were saying.
No,
would you like
don't
to carry?
Be sorry. Actually, this was a perfect lead-in because what I'm asking about now, first of all, let me tell you that I am so low-tech, I don't even have a cordless telephone.
Fair enough.
I don't even have a telephone.
But you do have a computer.
Uh-huh. No, I don't.
No,
I do.
She does.
Oh, you do have a computer,
yeah.
Yes. I think about it, and I'm still thinking about it, but, you know, there's the library, and there are friends, and so that's worked for me so far.
Mm-hmm.
However, I was trying recently, with the help of a friend at her home, to get Something that I have heard has been going around a lot that I wanted to hear, mm-hmm. and she has the capacity to hear things over her computer.
Mm-hmm.
And when we went to the web address, we found the piece on the web page, but she couldn't get it. And she called a friend who is knowledgeable in these matters, and she used terms like mirror and parallax and something that suggests that the information that this thing exists is there, but you can't get it. And I'm wondering what that is and why that is and how, for example, in purchasing a computer and getting, you know, deciding whether I want AOL or Roadrunner or whatever options I might have, how do you know whether you can get the things that you want to get?
Ah, okay. Well, in general, the answer is that you can. But the more factual matter of it is, and it's interesting you should be bringing this up because... I had read an article, and I think I may even have it here with me this afternoon. Hey, how about that? I stopped saying tonight. Yes, here it is right here. I have an article here which I'll go into in a little bit if you want.
Great.
It talks about dark space on the net. Basically, the general assumption has been amongst a lot of people and through methods of just basic chaos, every portion of the internet is connected to every other portion, then you can always get from point A to point B, regardless of where points A and B happen to be.
Mm-hmm.
They don't
want us to think that that's not true, of course.
Well, nobody owns the internet, so there isn't anybody to make sure that it's true. There isn't anybody to make sure that it's false. It just happens or it doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
And for the most part, it does happen, but... there are some dark corners of the internet that are difficult to reach from certain other dark corners of the internet. And that's really what it comes down to. Some of it is based on somebody just didn't think of connecting point A to point C. And some of it is that the internet provider over here is having a dispute with the internet provider over there. And some of it is, you know, and the list goes on. There's all kinds of reasons for it. What you could do, a lot of internet service providers will give you some sort of a trial period. And what you can do is get an internet provider and play with it for a little bit and see if you can hit all the sites you want to hit. And if you can't, then you invoke the right of return implied by the trial period and you go to a different ISP. That's really the only way to do it.
Except she doesn't have an ISP.
Right. Well, I'm not there yet, but I understand that basically it's a process then in terms of finding something that's going to meet your needs.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's like buying anything else, really.
Well, but you can't read all the stuff that's about it and find out. You have to just do it.
Afraid so.
Yeah, okay. It just struck me as pretty odd because I've heard so many people talking about this particular piece that I was really surprised that that it wasn't available. But who knew? Okay.
What was it a piece about?
It was a piece off Narco News.
No, I don't think I've heard of it.
Narconews.com.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard of it. Oh, it's been mentioned on, you know, shows like Democracy Now! And stuff. She's had people every once in a while from who have work that's posted there.
Mm-hmm. As a drug reform site?
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, you know, I've seen it referenced in magazines and things like that. So it's not obscure.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's one other element that also comes into play also. Yeah, see how many alsos I can fit into a sentence here.
Okay.
there's one other thing that also comes into play, and that is that you sometimes will have a website just within one organization that might not be perfectly well organized, and one person might change a piece without telling the person who was responsible for setting up a pointer to it. And when that happens, you end up with these little pieces that are off floating, and you can get to them if you know exactly what the address is, but you can't get to them through the obvious means of starting at the base of the website and working your way in. You follow what I'm saying?
I see. Right. So that's what it means when people give web addresses that include not only www.blobbityblob.com, but then it's
backslash
334.255.
Okay.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
That's when you get that, that's you're looking for a particular you're trying to find a particular point inside of that website.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's try to imagine if you can picture a web server as a house. Let's say www.radiocritter.com was a house.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go in there and you would find two hallways. You'd find 2000, you'd find 2001. You go down 2001 and you find all these little doors on the side, and each one of those is... And the thing of it is, you can add more terms to the end of the locator. And, you know, sometimes
yeah,
I wish this is television. Sometimes
yeah, one of the doors might turn out to be another hallway with tons of other doors in it.
Exactly.
And it just turns into a gigantic maze.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's better the more information you have in the first place. You'll know this is not the hallway.
But most of the time.
The hallway.
The room, yeah.
Most of the time, that's true.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Well, thanks very much.
Not a problem.
I appreciate it. And like I said, I'm real glad to have you back.
Hey, and thank you very much for the vote of support.
Great. Take care.
You too.
Bye.
And while we're on the subject of dark space on the net, why don't I just go with this article here? It came off of Security Focus and was written by Kevin Polson. He says, broadband customers in U.S. military systems are some of the most common victims of an online phenomenon researchers have dubbed dark address space, which leaves some 100 million hosts completely unreachable from portions of the Internet. For a variety of reasons, ranging from contract disputes among network operators to simple router misconfigurations, over 5% of the Internet's routable address space lacks global connectivity, according to the results of a 3-year study by researchers at the Massachusetts-based Arbor Networks, to be released on Tuesday. Popular belief holds that the Internet represents a completely connected graph, says Craig Labovitz, Arbor Networks Director of Network Architecture. It turns out that that's just not true. Anecdotal evidence has long hinted at the existence of dark address space, but the researchers shed light on the subject by continuously gathering and analyzing core routing tables for 3 years. In the end, they found that much of the Internet, the shortest path between two points, just doesn't exist. The most common factors contributing to dark address space are aggressive route filtering by network operators seeking to ease load on their equipment, and accidental misconfigurations. U.S. military sites frequently fall into the shadow zone because they often occupy neglected MILNET address blocks dating back to the Internet's Stone Age. Why cable modem customers also top the list remains one of the unsolved mysteries in the project, says Labovitz, who describes the research findings as preliminary. Despite the large number of hosts that fall into the partitioned space, the phenomenon is greatly not noticeable to the average Internet user because most netizens only use a tiny portion of the net. Most people access 5 or 10 websites. The study was conducted by Labovitz, Michael Bailey, and Abha Ahuja. In the course of their monitoring, the team also caught the occasional fleeting glimpse of another, more elusive routing anomaly, one that often comes with a more sinister explanation. Blocks of Internet address space that are supposed to be unused sometimes briefly appear in global routing tables and are used to launch a cyber attack or to send a flurry of unsolicited commercial email before being withdrawn without a trace. Dubbed murky address space, this works because of the fundamental insecurity of the Internet's routing infrastructure. Under protocols developed during cyberspace's Age of Innocence, if an Internet user or Internet router claims that it owns a block of address space, the rest of the Internet will take it at its word and route all traffic for that address block. You co-opt one router and you can create whatever nut block you want and inject it into the global net. Arbor Networks researchers went into the mail logs of a local Internet service provider and compared several thousand unique mail sources with murky address spotted during their marketing. They found that 30 of those addresses sprang into existence shortly before sending the email and quickly vanished afterwards. Because the routers don't normally log such activity, murky address space could hide the full range of antisocial or illegal network behavior, says Labovitz. In October, a report from Carnegie Mellon's CERT Coordination Center warned that hackers are increasingly compromising routers and using them to launch denial-of-service attacks against internet hosts. So, let's see. What else do we have here? Oh, I had one that's kind of an interesting thing, perhaps, to people who like music. This one has to do with copy protection on compact discs. As some of you will recall, we've discussed this topic before. There are a number of record companies that have been experimenting with doing things to corrupt the content of a CD just enough to make it so that you can't copy the CD while trying not to make it so that you can't play the CD. And I have a list here that comes from Fat Chucks. That can be found at www.fatchucks.com. And no, that would not be this Chuck. That would be some other Chuck. They said they have here a list of all of the corrupted CDs that they found. First off, all Universal Music Label albums starting in October 2001. Michael Jackson's promotional single You Rock My World. MP3.com's Various Artists CD. Of all the people to do this, you wouldn't think MP3.com would be doing that, would you?
Who knew? As long as they can get the bucks, I guess.
Charlie Pride's tribute to Jim Reeves. Let's see. We have a Tupac album, Until the End of Time. Aerosmith's Just Push Play. Tori Amos' Strange Little Girls, Back to Mine, Everything But the Girl, Band of Brothers soundtrack, Bjork, Dancer in the Dark soundtrack, Bush, Golden State, Collective Soul's 7-Year Itch, Crazy Town, Gift of the Game, Creed, Weathered, DC Talk, Supernatural, Lynn Doolin, Once in a Lifetime.
Lynn Doolin.
Eiffel 65, Contact.
That's even better than Tori's anus, you know, for making fun
jeepers.
Of names.
Soundtrack from Final Fantasy, Freestyler's Pressure Point, Beautiful Garbage by Garbage, Morning View by Incubus, Little T and One Track Mike, Foma's Dape, whatever that means, Tim McGraw Greatest Hits, NSYNC Celebrity, Oh Brother We're Out Thou soundtrack, Primus Antipop, Leanne Rimes You Light Up My Life, The Sopranos 2 soundtrack, Britney Spears Britney, big surprise there, Stained Break the Circle, System of a Down, Toxicity, Tool, Lateralis, and The Watchmen, Slow Motion. If you want to, if you find that you've got one that else is, yeah, I speak English good. If you find that you've got another one that has been corrupted by the record companies, Fat Chucks is also soliciting... soliciting any new entries. So what makes these CDs special is that they prevent you from copying them for personal use. They prevent you from playing them on any computerized device, such as a computer, a DVD player, or a CD-based MP3 player.
And that is the only thing that makes any of these albums special.
Game consoles like the PlayStation... consumer CD duplicators, high-end stereo equipment. It's ironic that it's always the high-end equipment that gets affected, because you know why? The high-end equipment doesn't cheat. It looks to keep things strictly to the standard. In doing this, the record companies have deviated from the standard, and they've produced a product that not every customer can use. Combine that with the typical return policy of any given record store, that if you bring it back opened, all you can do is get another one of the same. And guess what? Another one of the same
is exactly
is
the
going
same.
To do the same thing. Then we have a problem.
Yeah, if a serious audiophile has a problem with the sound on it because of the, I don't know, what would you call it, encryption kind of anti-copy thing. Then you're just stuck with it.
That's it. That's it exactly.
So my suggestion, buy vinyl. Low-tech solutions, purchase vinyl.
Oh, my. Actually, I kind of like that solution to a point, but I don't know.
But, you know.
Cassettes are still out there.
Yeah, cassettes. Yeah, cassettes. Cassettes are vinyl.
I don't know.
I don't know, though. Would an audiophile actually purchase a Michael Jackson album? That's the question. Perhaps a Tori Amos one, but Michael Jackson...
Well, I don't know. The thing about being an audiophile is it's not about a particular genre of music. It's just about an appreciation of the accurate reproduction thereof. We have a caller. Let's see who's on the line here. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm on the air?
You are on the air.
You're darn tootin'.
Wow, that was fast. I have a piece about security double standards.
Great.
Go for it.
Reminds me of the double standards that were applied to postal workers versus senators and congressmen. This is, I don't know if you saw this, it's about Lizzie Grubman. You know who that is?
I don't.
Publicity princess Lizzie Grubman, the woman who ran over the people in Long Island in a drunken snit.
Yes.
Well, her case drags on. It's dragging through the courts. However, in the post of Wednesday, it says, Lizzie's out of line. She bypasses security queue at court. Publicity princess Lizzie Grubman got special treatment from courthouse security yesterday when she arrived for a brief hearing on the vehicular assault charges filed against her for running down 14 people at a Hamptons club. Not a small crime. Grubman gives her the way she's dressed. It's important. Grubman, dressed in a cream turtleneck and tight black pantsuit, arrived with a burly bodyguard, two lawyers, and a friend for a 9:30 a.m. Suffolk County Court conference in Riverhead, Long Island. She and her entourage were whisked inside by court personnel, allowing her to avoid a line of citizens backed up at a metal detector and emptying their pockets. Some of those people were being, quote, wanded, unquote, with handheld metal detectors held by court officers.
But not her.
Did one of them go off as she walked by?
Well, I'll finish. It's not that long. I'll finish it. Quote, I can't believe they're doing that, said one observer who believed Grubman received special treatment. Three others who witnessed Lizzie's entrance said she bypassed security measures, but authorities denied the claim. Quote, I can't comment as to why that happened, unquote, said Grubman lawyer David Smith, who claimed Lizzie passed through a detector adjacent to the public machine. That must be their luxury metal detector. Grubman did not comment.
This is the box seats.
Grubman did not comment. One court officer told the Post that Grubman went through a metal detector, and it was turned on, despite observers' claims that it was not. Quote, there was an officer there and it was turned on, unquote, the officer said. Quote, she didn't beep, so she didn't have to empty her pockets, unquote. He did not explain why Grubman went through the second detector, which is reserved for law enforcement personnel and is usually turned off, while members of the public went through the main entry. In other words, they had to take the freight elevator. In a brief conference, and then it's about her court appearance. Charges of favoritism for the rich and connected publicity maven surfaced quickly. That's about other kid glove treatment that she's received during her court, you know, her legal ordeal.
Interesting.
Yeah, so...
I would think if I were a cop and somebody privileged like that, you know, came through, I would take the opportunity to harass them as much as possible.
Well, you know... Yeah, well, you
but
might
that's
think
if
that,
you and I
but
were
you might
a cop.
Think that, but that would be a pretty... I think that that would be based on a pretty naive underestimation of just how deeply ingrained the idea of privilege for people... like Madame Grubman is in the system, so that...
Well,
yeah,
you know,
I suppose
after
that's
all,
why I'm a secretary instead of a cop.
After all, we all know that O.J. was innocent, right?
Of course. Of course he was.
Well,
yeah, I hear you clearing your throat there. That's my thoughts exactly.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's
Why, they even had him on a cable talk show as an example of good fatherhood, good single fatherhood, exceptional single fatherhood. That's O.J. Simpson.
Well, yeah, so...
No, never mind why he's a single father. Never mind the reason that he's raising his children alone. He's a great single dad.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Well,
all right.
Anyway, actually, the metal detector thing is the least of the... examples of the special treatment that this particular society figure is getting. The main thing, of course, is the way that the charges themselves are being handled. First of all, they've been reduced. Apparently, the original charges, which the piece is very careful to not characterize, it says that originally she was charged with intentionally backing her Mercedes SUV into a crowd of revelers at Southampton's Conscience Point Inn on
July. Do they still have revelers in Southampton?
Pardon me?
Do they still have revelers in Southampton?
Revelers.
That's amazing.
Well, so, no, this was last. This was pre September 11th.
Mm.
So, if that's what you're referring to, but anyway, that was on July 7th after an argument with the bouncer. Now, if I had to characterize a charge like that, I would have to call that attempted murder.
Mm.
Oh, yeah.
When you intentionally back a large vehicle into a group of people standing around. Now, the piece doesn't bother to characterize it, but then it goes on to say that the charges treatment. First of all, the cops didn't check her to see if she was drinking.
Hmm.
And it said a grand jury later indicted her on 26 counts, including assault, leaving the scene of an accident, and drunken driving. That's a hell of a lot less than attempted murder.
Yeah, it is.
So, I mean, that's the most important aspect of the, or example of the special treatment, the metal detector. It's interesting what the press, you know, the examples of special treatment that they choose to focus on, and I think, you know, you raising the O.J. case is one of the times where it actually did happen, but they actually focused in that case, and I think it's probably because of racism, they focused on the charges themselves and not on a bunch of extraneous, essentially trivial examples of special treatment. You know, like, did O.J. go through a special metal detector when he went to court?
Mm-hmm.
You know, he probably did, but do we ever hear about it? No. But in this case, this is what they highlight.
Mm. Yeah, the minor examples of, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. So, anyway, thank you for your time.
Not a problem.
Welcome back. I'm
thank
glad
you for
you're
calling.
Back, too.
Hey, thanks.
Yep.
Good to have you with me.
Bye.
All right, bye. And we have another caller on the line. Hello, caller. Are you there? You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
Compare the case your caller just mentioned to the young lady with strip shirts for trying to get on an airplane.
Oh, right. Oh yeah.
Remember?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, kind of a difference, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I remember that one now that you mention it. That was a while back.
Yeah, yeah, when you were back on the year before. Comment on the flying, too. I used to fly when I was a kid all the time. Of course, the pilot was Dad. And I always knew what was going on. I always knew he checked everything before we got in the plane. But I would be safe in a small plane, I would think.
Well, except that now the planes are simply falling apart midair. That's the only thing that worries me.
In the example you gave earlier, I think it was this large, heavy person who wasn't strapped in that caused the problem.
Right, Al Sharpton.
Right.
Yeah. Not Al Sharpton. I'm thinking of another man with wild hair. Don King. Sorry.
Yes, Don King.
Similarity, yeah. You have to admit that the arm of the chair didn't fly off on its own. He
yes, I'm sure he landed on it or something, yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay, that's about all I have. Okay.
All right, well, thank you very much for calling, and thank you very, very much for listening.
Yeah, we're glad to have you back on the air.
Hey,
great,
thanks.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Take care.
What a welcome we're getting today.
Hey, it's amazing. I didn't realize we had that many listeners.
No.
I really
especially
didn't.
Not that many listeners, you know, like, marked it on their calendar this
time. I'm grateful. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, no.
I think it's a wonderful thing. I need to take a quick moment here to do a public service announcement. You're listening to Little Brother on 91.5 FM, WRPI, Troy. In the United States, tens of millions of dogs and cats are dumped at shelters and pounds because they're no longer wanted. Millions more are born on the streets or abandoned by uncaring owners. If you're considering a companion animal, visit your local animal shelter and adopt a homeless animal. Be responsible. Have your pet spayed or neutered. For information on breed rescue groups and on low-cost spay-neuter services, call the local ASPCA at 518-465-2061. Here's one I find kind of interesting. As I'm sure I've mentioned before on this show, and anybody who knows me knows I mentioned this ad infinitum, but I'm going to mention it again.
Is what, Sklerov?
No, believe it or not, Sklerov is not in the news.
Wow.
Which is actually kind of...
ominous.
Yes. Yes, I would think that we should be hearing something about him sometime soon. I know that the justice system tends to plod along sometimes at glacial rates, but I guess
particularly in cases such as this.
Well, yeah, where it's going to cause the most harm possible to this guy. But I'd better get off of that thread for the moment here. Coming back to where I was going here, I'm a Linux user, and I'm very proud of it. Because of the fact that I don't like the alternatives that are out there. For those not familiar with Linux, it is an open source free operating system that you might use instead of, say, for example, using Windows or Mac OS or whatever's appropriate to your computer. And it's not for everybody, I'll admit that. However, Microsoft seems to be scared. This article appeared in the Register at www.theregister.co.uk, and by Thomas Green. He says, Linux is the long-term threat against the core business. Never forget that. That's what, according to Microsoft Windows Division VP Brian Valentine, exclaiming in a confidential memo to his sales brown shirts obtained by the Register. The core outrage from Valentine's perspective is that all of the Sun and IBM shops are migrating in droves to the cheaper Intel platform and observing along the way that Linux is a good deal easier to deal with if you're already acquainted with Unix. Funny that, kind of the key idea behind Linux, but we digress. Quote, I need you to make sure that as many of these customers as possible continue to migrate off of Unix but onto Windows 2000 on Intel, says Valentine. You should be smothering your accounts from every angle, and if you see Linux and or IBM anywhere in it, then get all over it. Don't lose a single win to Linux. Valentine's hard sell hall monitors will be marching through a data center near you, we gather, and searching for open source contaminants and anything else that breathes in the marketplace and consumes their air. If you haven't done it at your customer sites, then do a walkthrough of their data centers and take inventory of where you see Sun machines, IBM, etc., and ask them what they are running on those machines. Learn about what they do with those systems. Keep that inventory in your back pocket. Hell, tattoo it on your butt if you have to, and go after them. Knock them out one machine, one application, one department at a time. I cannot stress how important this is. It's no secret that Microsoft has long regarded Linux as a threat, at least not since Eric Raymond broke the news 2 years ago with the infamous Halloween documents, but it's lovely to see that it's becoming the threat, apparently because it empowers people to operate computers and networks without buying into the nebulous Microsoft .NET vision, which, as you'll see below, the company thinks of as something to be positioned by its products. We just love the way salesmen talk, especially frightened ones.
You know, I don't know if fright is the right word here, though. I think it's a little...
Sheer terror?
No. A little, actually a lot less dramatic. It's simple greed. Just human greed.
Yeah, well, greed drives the company.
Mm-hmm.
And since you are taking, since your Linux is taking a pot shot at the opportunities that greed presents to the company, Linux is taking a pot shot at the company.
Dear God.
It's endangering Microsoft. How cool is that?
Well, in theory, it's endangering Microsoft. It's, I don't know. Do you think that they're actually fearful, or do you think that they just don't want to share?
Well,
that's the
of
question.
Course they don't want to share.
Well, of course, but that's really the, to my mind, that's the real question about that story.
Well,
is it just greed, or is it actual fear?
The thing of it
is it a real threat, or is it just that they just don't want to share the profits with anyone?
Well, the thing of it is, if they allow there to be competition, then they have to actually produce a product that works correctly. You follow what I'm getting at?
Not necessarily. I think you're underestimating the large number of ignorant consumers out there.
Why do you think I'm trying to educate people right now? Okay. Let's see what else we have going on here. Oh, yes. Our other favorite whipping boy.
Sclera?
Verizon.
Verizon, who eats poop.
That reminds me. Email address, if you'd like to send email to me, is critter@verizoneatspoop.com. And since I haven't mentioned it in a bit, the phone numbers here are area code 518-276-6248. And if you don't want to go on the air and you don't feel so inclined to drop me an email or are unable to drop me an email for whatever reason, no computer, computer down, internet service provider went belly up, whatever, you can always send snail mail to me. Send it to Chuck Ritter, care of WRPI, 1 WRPI Plaza, Troy, New York, 12180. And you know, now that I mention it, it just occurred to me I forgot to check my mailbox on the way in.
Shame on you.
I'll have to do that at the next break. Actually, why don't we take a quick break, and we'll come back to Verizon in a couple minutes. You're listening to Little Brother on 81.5 FM, WRPI Troy.
We'll be right back.
And you're listening to 91.5 FM WRPI, Troy. Funny thing, mailbox was empty. But if you'd like to fill it up, please feel free. Send me snail mail at Chuck Ritter, care of WRPI, 1 WRPI Plaza, Troy, New York, 12180.
I think I'd like to fill your mailbox, perhaps with plastic peanuts.
Yeah, but plastic peanuts are a little difficult to read on the air.
You can make neat squeaky noises with them, though.
Hey, you know, that's true. That's true.
That's actually true, yes.
That would be...
not at all true. Interesting or anything else, but definitely true.
So I see Phil is sitting in the next room previewing some music.
Yes, we found a mysterious CD with some sort of Asian writing on it. We're not sure if it's Chinese or perhaps Japanese or any number of other things, but...
I think it's Japanese, previewing. But I just don't know for sure.
Honestly, I have no exposure, so I don't know.
I think the characters are too... we're not complex enough to be Chinese.
And that's right, the Chinese is usually more
And they didn't
lines.
Have the loopy thingies in them like you have
the
in Korean.
Loopy things in Korean, okay. Mm-hmm. I'm not familiar with Korean at all.
Okay.
But, well, loopy thingies.
Oh, thought I saw a phone call for a second there, but I guess I was mistaken. Anyhow, all right, the item we have on Verizon... has to do with their relationship with the Public Service Commission and with some customers in Manhattan. Apparently they've got about 90% of their customers back in service since 9/11. However, there are about, let's see here. Where was the number? I had a number right in front of me there. Where was it? There it is. No, that's not the right number. Well, anyway, about 10% of the 200,000 phone lines and 3.5 million data circuits that were affected in the World Trade Center incident still, to this day, have not been restored. And guess what? Verizon, who are normally required to offer rebates for service outages exceeding 24 hours, has successfully lobbied the New York State Public Service Commission for a suspension of these regulations. So guess what? Here you have all of these people in New York City still paying their phone bills, still being charged for phone service and data service they're not getting.
Hmm.
Only Verizon.
They eat poop.
Yes, they do. Speaking of which, the email address is critter@verizoneatspoop.com. And since the phones are quiet at the moment, I'll announce again that the phone number is area code 518-276-6248. And I would love to hear from anybody out there listening who has an opinion on any of this stuff.
Or anything. Anything at all.
Anything at all, even.
Do you have an opinion on styrofoam peanuts? We want to know.
At any rate, the folks that do the 2:30 show haven't shown, so we're going to keep right on going here with Little Brother. And maybe we'll go until 3 o'clock and then maybe play some music for the last half hour. Hey, we have a phone call.
All right.
Hello, caller. You're on the air. Hello? Oh, hang on.
Did you pick up the wrong line?
There. Now you're on the air.
I'm being a glutton. I called you a little while ago.
Oh, dear.
I'm sorry.
Well, all right. That's all right.
I have a question and a comment.
Go for it.
The person that called in about using small planes to travel instead of big ones.
Mm-hmm.
It's important for anybody like that to keep in mind that the greatest risk when flying occurs when taking off and landing.
Oh, absolutely.
Which makes no difference to the size of the plane. Well, I shouldn't say it makes none, but, you know. It's...
Well, the big reason why I had thought anyway that that a small plane might be a better choice is that it would be less of a spectacle. It would be something that would be. That I would think a terrorist would be less likely to hit.
Right, but the danger now isn't just terrorism. Now the planes are just
now
falling
the planes
apart
are falling
from
apart. Yes,
turbulence.
I know.
Well, but you guys have to keep in mind that with this tightened security at the main airline terminals, the miscreants are going to be forced to to pick aircraft that are more less secure,
mm-hmm.
and that may be the smaller ones.
Yes.
I hope you realize that's tongue-in-cheek.
For example, perhaps John Travolta's jet. I hear he has quite a lot of security on that.
Well, that would be, of course, he would be an attractive
Well, I don't think he would be that attractive in a target, but, you know, that's just my personal opinion.
He wouldn't be. Anyway, I like him anyway, but...
Although, you know, I don't know. They're still saying that this seems to be an accident more than anything else. There's still the fear there that it might be sabotaged in some way, this last flight that went down. But I would like to tell a story that I heard from my boss, actually.
It was a dark and stormy night.
Actually, I believe it was it his nephew? Yes, I think his nephew just got married. And his wife and part of his family, of course, since his wife is Dominican. So his nephew, who is, I believe, Dominican, was on that flight. Not on that flight. He had gone to the Dominican Republic for vacation and was coming back. And he was on that exact plane the night before its tail fell off and it hit Queens. And he said that they were having problems with it in the Dominican Republic the day before. So there was obviously actually something wrong with that plane. So that's some evidence, you know, against anyone that still might be afraid that it was somehow terrorism, that it was indeed, you know, just an accident, just poor timing for bad luck.
Well, I mean, just for the record, I could cite much more compelling evidence in the other direction. But
could you?
Oh,
well,
sure.
Let's hear.
Oh, sure. When it first happened, you know, when the reporters were out talking to people who were walking around in that area and saw the plane, one woman in particular, she was out walking her dog, I think. She lives there, and she's, you know, right in that neighborhood. And,
mm-hmm.
and she said that she sees planes, you know, taking off all the time because she lives there. And so, you know, she's very familiar with, you know, their behavior and their... And exactly the what the takeoff pattern is in terms of their physical position,
mm-hmm.
and so on. And so she said that what she saw was the plane was going along fine, and then that there was an explosion where the where one wing meets the fuselage.
Mm-hmm.
And that after that, something fell off. And she didn't say that it was the tail section. And I would think, you know, that the average person can be relied upon to be able to discern whether it was the tail section.
Mm-hmm.
Now, presumably, you know, given the proximity of this neighborhood to the takeoff route of the plane... she, you know, the tail section, which is enormous, would be quite visible.
Oh, yeah.
And if that was what fell off, she would have said it was the tail section.
Yeah.
But she didn't. She said...
Something.
In fact, I think she said it looked like one of the engines.
Yeah, that's what people were saying that day, too. They said one of the engines fell off. They didn't say the tail section came
right.
apart.
Right. So, you know, so how do you square that?
I don't know.
The explosion.
Yeah, the explosion is strange for sure.
I heard this woman being interviewed. She didn't sound like, you know, some breathless, someone who was breathless and, what's the word, panic.
Brainless?
No, she
sounded calm.
She was very composed. She was very articulate, and she was horrified, of course, but she described what she saw and sounded like, it didn't sound like what they're trying to convince us
is happening.
Has happened, but in any event, that's not why I called. What I wanted to know was, you know, given the enhanced security measures, so to speak, that the government has voted for itself in terms of surveillance on, you know, us lowly people.
Peons.
Now, does that give them, can they take, is carnivore the big overarching... computer spy system.
Yeah, that's the one.
That's the one. Does that give them the ability to put cookies wherever they want?
No. Carnivore doesn't have anything to do with cookies.
Well, could it?
Well, I suppose it could monitor the passage of cookies, but the whole one of the whole points to Carnivore is that it's a passive system. It sits back and it listens. It doesn't really say anything, or at least that's what we've been led to believe.
Yeah, but isn't that, in a sense, what cookies do part of the time?
No.
I mean, but then you can put, you know, they can store information that can be recalled, but...
Yeah, but the thing is, a cookie gets stored on an individual user's computer.
That's what I mean.
And then gets dished out later on request of the server. Whereas Carnivore wouldn't initiate any kind of a data transfer. It just sits back and it watches all the data transfers taking place. Now, theoretically, that would put Carnivore in a position where it could see a cookie get passed. Either direction, either from a server to a client or vice versa. But no, Carnivore just, like I say, as we've been led to believe, just sits back and watches the traffic. It doesn't contribute.
But that doesn't make any sense. I mean, if you think about it, what's the point of just watching and listening in the in a completely passive way? That serves no purpose.
Sure does. If you sit back and you listen passively, then you're going to capture the traffic in its normal pattern. You're going to see what people are usually doing. And that's really what you're trying to, what they're trying to accomplish.
Well, isn't what people are usually doing always changing?
I don't know. We're quite the creatures of habit, typically.
I mean, isn't that what evolution is all about?
Well, evolution is slow.
It's
dynamic, but it's slow evolution.
So there are contours.
So overall,
you know?
It's kind of static.
There are contours.
Yeah.
All right, well... That's a wonderful lesson in the ultimate predictability of life and culture is that Carnivore, you know, was able to decide that yes, indeed, you know, there is a something or other. There is a God. There is a God, and it is all a great plan. So they don't have to do anything; they just watch.
Yeah.
Watch reality unfold. Okay, you answered my question. Sorry to bother you again.
Oh, don't
no
sweat
problem.
It. Like I said before, thank you very much for calling.
All right, it's great to have you back.
Hey, thanks.
Bye.
All right. And why is that line blinking? It's acting like we put it on hold. Let's see who's there. Nobody.
It's a busy signal.
Okay, I guess the... I hung it up too fast.
Maybe.
I don't know. Anyway. Maybe. Okay. So I seem to have lost my place, but what else is new? We'll just...
We should just take a moment to get your tang untangled.
Yeah, right. In fact, while I'm doing that, why don't I play this? Okay. Well, Faisal Ahmed has arrived to do the window on Islam, and that will be coming up in just a few minutes. So we're going to wrap it up here with Little Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter, and you can find this show or any past show at www.radiocritter.com. If you'd like to send email, my email address is critter@verizoneatspoop.com. And lastly, if you want to send snail mail to me, send it to me here, care of the station, Chuck Ritter, WRPI, 1 WRPI Plaza, Troy, New York, 12180. So, once again, that's a wrap. We'll be here next week at the same time, 1:30 on Saturday. So tune it in. Talk to you then.